Hello and a massive happy welcome to Hulkcast 121. As usual, I'm James Rushton and I'm joined once again by Danny Raza. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing well, mate. How are you?
Oh, man, really happy. You know, one of the best things I think people listen to podcasts in is about diversity and opinions, you know, having a bit of a moan, listening to criticism. But after these two last games that we've been through, there's not much to honestly disagree with. It's been pretty incredible what Villa have done in the last week. Firstly, the win against QPR, which we talked about last Sunday. But since then, it's been incredible. You know, three games, 9 points. Can't ask for more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just been business as usual, hasn't it, from Villa? I suppose they've done what's been expected of them. Albeit it's been fairly slender wins, but I think the 2-0 victory that's just obviously happened over the weekend is a sign that, you know, now we're starting to win these games slightly more comfortably. You know, it did start off as though we're playing well, getting draws, you know, not losing games. Then it got to a point where we're winning 1-0, you know, getting the 2-1 victories, right? 2-0 victory this weekend over a decent side. You know, perhaps now we're going to start seeing Villa get a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, that buffer. Funnily enough, my dad was pretty pissed yesterday after the Villa game. He had a few ciders, but he was walking back and he's speaking about buffers and how life's got to be a buffer. I go out and do my trading. Now I need a buffer of work to keep me going, and I'm going out in winter. I need a buffer of clothes, and yeah, it's about buffer of goals. We need to score for security at some points. But it's been pretty comfortable at times. So let's go back, go for our time machine to midweek when we played Chris Coleman Sunderland. I didn't expect it to be as scary as it was, and it wasn't that Sunderland were incredible. It's just Villa were so lethargic, and I think that is to do with fitness levels coming straight out of that win against QPR on the weekend, and they were pretty tired. I mean, that can't, you know, I think the manager has to answer some questions about rotation there, right?
Yeah, I think it was, once again, it was a similar thing from Villa, wasn't it? If I remember correctly, I'm just trying to remember what the exact lineup was.
It was exactly the same as the QPR game. It was Johnston, Hutton, Samba, Chester, Taylor, Snodgrass, Whelan, Houlihan, Adoma, Onoma, and
Davies. It was, wasn't it? We did see a change in the next match, but obviously that was obviously a substitution. But yeah, going back to Sunderland, yeah, I think that was it. It was a little bit lethargic. It was a little bit slow, but it's also a Tuesday night fixture, isn't it? And you do expect to see that sometimes, you know, on evening games. You know, perhaps the lads have only had one day of training or a couple of days of training in between since the weekend, and it's always going to be difficult to get off to a flying start. But you know, we did score the first goal, and that's all you can really ask, really.
Yeah, what we said was Chris Coleman would come in with the counter-attack, and if Villa did step on their throats, there would be that whole spirit of the underdog thing that he was known for with Wales. Wales, incredibly gifted team, an incredibly spirited team. But when he joined, there was low morale, very poor morale, and he was almost stupid for taking that job. Again, they're saying that about him taking the Sunderland job. But they did play the ball over the top. They did attack on the break, and they did look very scary at times. And how Villa managed to actually deal with them, I will never know. At points, I thought that was a game that we would lose. But yeah, we come back incredibly. Through some of the attacking play, we managed to pull out spots. We managed to score out of nowhere. So especially both of our goals come from almost zero build-up. Albert Adoma grabbing the first goal, of course, with Josh Onoma grabbing the second. Adoma turning in that cross from Snodgrass, and Onoma grabbing another deflection. It seems like he can only score through deflections.
Yeah, we are turning into a side that can really sort of smash and grab. I'm just looking back at the stats from the Sunderland game. I'm surprised to see that Sunderland had something like 58% possession throughout the whole game. Also just performed better than us in the air and in many other areas as well. But it is interesting how we're scoring a lot of goals through through balls and long shots, you know, efforts from outside the box. That is something that we've been doing quite a lot as of late. I think who scored as well have us down as a side who just tend to like shooting from outside of the area. And I think it just shows a little bit more confidence. We're being a little bit more speculative. And even Robbie Snodgrass as well, we're seeing it from him quite a lot of the time. I think he set up a beautiful assist as well for Adoma. Just being able to find those opportunities and understanding that there's players on the other side of the pitch who are on the same wavelength of you as you. And I'm liking what we're seeing in that respect. It's very much like the old Dutch style.
Yeah, I mean, Aston Villa, It's almost like a mockery to say that Aston Villa are like total football, but at the moment it is. They are making chances left, right and centre. They're scoring smash and grab victories like we had against Sunderland and complete victories like we saw against Ipswich. But the Sunderland, looking back on it, it seems incredible. You know, the scoreline seems so positive. But at the game, it was actually really quiet. It was like a zombie-like atmosphere there. There was almost no singing. There was almost no celebrations. It was almost like the goals took us by surprise. And especially at the end when Graben, of course, as you predicted, scored and pulled one back for Coleman Sunderland. There was a really nervy atmosphere. It was almost a sigh of relief that we got the 2-1 victory at home. And yeah, I thought there was a bit maybe too much expectation there, reversing the bottom of the league. And maybe people were thinking, like I said, we'd maybe get 3-0. But maybe there's too much expectation
there. Say what you like. Sunderland are bottom of the league. Yeah, they are. You know, they're bottom of the league because they've been poor and they haven't been playing up to their potential. But you look at that team and it is actually... I mean, they're suffering through a lot of what we had last season. It is actually a team that should be performing ahead of most sides in the Championship. You know, you've got McGeady and McManaman on the wings. You've got Honeyman and Gooch, obviously. You know, Honeyman's a lot more of a younger player there. But you've also got Gibson holding that midfield together. And he's always going to make things difficult for you. Even that defence, even though John O'Shea's getting on a bit, you know, you look at some of those defenders in there. Oviedo as well, and Matthews. They're all players who should be performing to a higher level. So if they do decide to switch it on, especially with a new manager coming in, the side that's playing against them is always going to struggle. So I'm not incredibly surprised that we had a little bit of a tough time against them, because when those sorts of players and players with that kind of talent, especially players, you know, funnily enough, who've probably played Champions League football as well, not for Sunderland, obviously, when they're going to switch it on and play for a particular occasion, this one being Coleman being in charge, then they're going to make it tough for you, mate.
Yeah, I mean, Sunderland did win yesterday against Burton, and that was incredibly obvious from the way they played against Aston Villa. They didn't look like the bottom of the league side they are. And, you know, fingers crossed, if they don't, I hope they don't go down, because I do have a few friends who support Sunderland, and it would just be an absolute misery for them to go down. But these things happen. If you can't perform like you did against Villa and Burton in every single game, then you're going to have the run of the results go against you.
Yeah, mate, the thing is, if they go down, that they'll be dead, because there's got to be players on high wages there. I mean, O'Shea, Gibson, McGeady, I cannot see any of those players being able to kind of take huge pay cuts for being down in League One.
Yeah.
I'd hate to like see what would happen if they went down.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't perhaps be like the Pompey sort of situation where you barely own any assets in forms of players or your stadium or your facilities. Because what we have to remember here is Sunderland are absolutely a humongous football club. Their stadium is absolutely incredibly huge. They've got incredible facilities and they've still got players who people would buy. So if they go down, it wouldn't be like the kind of Rangers situation where they go straight insolvent. There'd be incredible financial worries. But they have at least a saving grace that they've got the stadium they can sell off. They've got the facilities they can sell off and players they can sell off. Drastic situations there. And I think we've been there. We've been there, especially when we was coming down from the Premier League. We've been in the misery heap. So, we shouldn't, you know, people in Glasshouse shouldn't throw stones, I guess.
Oh, I suppose not. And I suppose that stadium as well, Stadium of Light, it's not very old either. I can't imagine Sunderland fans wanting to move down to, you know, a small sort of a stadium, which is probably being used for non-league football. I know that.
More reflective of their, you know, potential League One status.
You know, it wouldn't even be League One status if you're going to have to move. It'd be sort of non-league level. Also, Stadium of Light is just, I've got to make this point. It sounds like it belongs in an anime. I don't know who named it to start with, but there you go.
it's quite weird, isn't it? We've had some. We haven't had much luck there recently, but there will be a return fixture later on this season that we'll be heading to. And we've been doing quite well away from home recently. Aston Villa, complete turnaround, and 2-1 against Sunderland. Josh Onoma stealing the show. To be honest, absolutely incredible display from the young man from Tottenham. Robert Snodgrass turned it on as of late, but Keenan Davis, unfortunately, lacking the fitness, incredibly gassed at the end. no, and that's not on him. He plays every single week if it's not.
Well, yeah, this is it with Keenan Davis. This lad is basically started off the season. I think this is the way it is, right? obviously Kadir wasn't fit at the start of the season. That was just the way it is. You know, we tried Scott Hogan up top. Keenan Davis has started the season as he's a young player that might be brought through. We'll play him up alongside some of these more experienced strikers. Who knows? Maybe he's going to be decent, right? We'll see what he does, right? And then Hogan gets injured, also just wasn't playing to his potential. And then Jonathan Kadir decides to come back, play okay, but not to the level that he was playing at before, and then gets injured again. And Keenan Davis is left here thinking, hang on a second, I am the first choice striker. There is nobody ahead of him in that starting lineup, and there is nobody who can basically challenge him for it. Now, what makes me worried is that is an awful lot of pressure for a kid of his age. Actually, that's probably disrespectful to call him a kid, right? Obviously, he's a man, whatever. He's around about our age, but it's an incredible amount of pressure to put on him. You know, somebody who hasn't been playing an awful lot of competitive football by this point. It will be interesting to see what he does, because some players take it in their stride, don't they? Look at Jamie Vardy coming straight up from non-league and then basically being able to handle the pressure of competitive football, especially in the Championship. I think Davis has taken it in his stride, but it's just going to be an awful lot of work for him, isn't it? And I'd just like to see us perhaps see if we can go with another option. Maybe the option is Jack Grealish up top. Maybe it's a Doma. I don't know how I feel about Davis playing every single week, every single game. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, especially, Onoma and Davis have this incredible thing where they will not stop for 90 minutes. It's almost a kind of unintelligence where you'll have players like the best players in the world will know when to press and know when to attack. But people like Davis and Onoma will just attack the ball every single second they're around it.
Yeah.
And that's to their detriment. The positives of that are that it's an incredible press. It's an incredible pressure on the defence, because you've got two incredibly gifted players that will charge you down at a moment's notice. The poor side of it is they're going to run out of fitness incredibly quick. And it's, incredible how they've lasted three games in a row doing the same thing.
But you know what? Maybe that's what makes elite players, though. We're talking about players who obviously play for England at obviously a lower level. Perhaps this is the kind of pressure that they need to basically, almost break themselves and make sure that they do get to that level where they are playing in the Premier League and playing at a consistent rate as well. So it will be interesting to see whether they can carry on. I think the thing to mention about Davis as well is he's incredibly intelligent. One thing I noticed about him, it's interesting that you say he runs around a lot and just presses everywhere. But when you look at his positioning and you look at where he places himself when somebody like Snodgrass has the ball, he's always in the right place.
Yes.
I'd say 80 to 90% of the time. You don't look at Davis and think, why aren't you in that area? Why aren't you in that area? And that's something experienced strikers lack.
Yeah, I mean, Keenan Davis, his mental attributes to this game, his anticipation of the ball, his knowledge of the game is so far beyond his years. And I don't know where it comes from, to be honest, because you have to gain it through experience. And what you need to know about Keenan Davis is that this is an even bigger rise than the Jamie Vardy rise or any other rise from the bottom. Keenan Davis was working in a barbershop 2 years ago. He'd not given up on his chance of playing football, but he'd been released from the Stevenage Academy. Vardy was released from Sheffield Wednesday, whilst Davis was released from a League Two football team academy.
Wow, I didn't know that.
You know, then he's playing at Biggleswade Town. Biggleswade, a non-league football team. They've got an incredibly gifted academy, and I know there's some really hard workers. Some of you actually listen to this podcast. I mean, their scout that I speak to on Twitter, Gareth Cooper, there's people that follow Villa from Biggleswade that are following the Keenan Davis story. So they're not this, random Sunday league team. There is quality there. But Davis has come from a barbershop apprentice, walking a mile to football training, and then suddenly is the start leading the line for Aston Villa. And this quality, I don't know how it passed so many teams by, because Keenan Davis' first game that he played for Villa in a serious football against Brighton last year, he displayed the exact same things as we're seeing now. It's not like he's suddenly got better or he's learnt from his game or he's learning. It's just been almost the finished product from the get-go. And it's incredibly strange to see that at Villa, because we are so used to players who are nearly theirs, like Gabby Bonlahor and Jack Grealish, we have still yet to see the talents he will bring to the table after that horrific injury earlier this season. But Keenan Davis almost looks like the finished article, and that is so rare to see in such a young player.
No, absolutely. You just don't see it from new strikers, especially because after a few games, if they haven't scored a goal, there's a lot of players who come up like that and you just don't hear from them again. But obviously, Bruce must have a certain amount of trust in him. And it's interesting that he managed to basically leapfrog Hepburn Murphy in this whole process as well. That's another thing that people don't mention. There are talented young players within the Villa team, but Keenan Davis is the only one who actually looks physically like ready to play up front for us. And that's the only thing I'm worried about with if we go with somebody like Callum O'Hare up top. I'm not sure I'd be able to deal with the physicality of the Championship. And I think that's one of the things that you have to owe to Davis. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's found it, I won't say easier, but I think more comfortable to adapt to the Championship.
Yeah, really happy with Keenan Davis. And I think every Villa fan is seriously enjoying to seeing what's coming of him. I mean, his finishing it is seriously lacking. You know, sometimes some of the chances he misses are, but you forgive him for it because he's such an intelligent player who gels the team together so well. And he just knows how to play Onana and Snodgrass and Adoma so very well. And yeah, unfortunately, we're missing goals from him, but there's one man who's bringing the goals in, mate. It's Albert Adoma, a goal against Sunderland, of course. But he's had a Jamie Vardy-like rise as well. I mean, it's been a bit faster, but of course he started at Harrow Borough, went to Barnet, then to Middlesbrough, then to Villa, or Bristol City, then Middlesbrough, then to Villa. So he's come from the bottom as well. He's come from the Sunday League football. And we're really getting the best out of him.
Yeah, he's really sort of switching it back on now, isn't he? I think he's playing with a bit of freedom. And I think what's helped that has definitely been that in creativity, I think that increase of creativity in the Villa team in general. It's been a long time since we've had a balanced midfield. We've had a lot of talented wingers in the side. I'm not saying we've had wingers who have established themselves or who have done well for us in the long run, but you look at everybody who's come in. We've had, over the last couple of years or so, you've had Adama. Obviously, Snodgrass has come in. We had who else did we have last season? I'm trying to remember. At one point, we had Carl Hill as well. And a lot of these players came and they just never seemed to find they never seemed to find the assists. They never seemed to find the goals either. And I think what's happened now is we've actually got a balanced midfield where you've got Glenn Whelan, who's doing absolute wonders as a linchpin. You've got Conor Hourihan who's finding these players when they find space, and Adoma and Snodgrass just work together like salt and pepper. Like they just complement each other so well. Snodgrass seems to know where Adoma is all the time, and the same thing with Adoma. But I think as well the fact that Keenan Davis is being forced to play up top for us has meant that, you know, I hate to say it, but it means that we're not building the side around Jonathan Codger. And I think that's possibly what's helped the freedom of Adoma. We're concentrating a lot more on our creativity.
Jonathan Codger is an incredible player. He scares defences like no one else. But the fact is that Villa are playing a lot deeper. They're playing out from the back a lot more. And they're also finding a way to mix a bit of possession with a bit of direct ability. So you'll get the best out of players like Davis and Onana through pure possession football where they can hold up and wait, but also Robert Snodgrass and Albert Adoma benefit from a direct approach. That's almost this mix and match of, you know, footballing styles that are bringing the best out of every single set of players that we have. And it's incredible to see, especially Albert Adoma, someone who is having so much fun play for Aston Villa, and it's a delight. He stood when he scored. We'll come on to the Ipswich Town game in a bit, but when he scored his second goal, he simply stood on the advertising board and held out his arms and just reveled in the praise. And it's someone, he just loves scoring goals and getting admired. And I've never seen someone have so much fun playing football at a professional level.
Well, he's partying. He's partying, yeah. Isn't he? And this is the thing. Villa are allowed to be positive now. Over the last couple of years, when we've had a win or we've had a player score a goal, it's almost kind of been a little bit taboo for them to enjoy the moment and basically have fun with it, because we'd know that the next week would be capable of getting thrashed.
Yeah.
And I think, like, well, after the run that we've been on and the amount of victories have actually managed to rack up over the last couple of months, the players have a right to be having a bit more fun. And now we're starting to see that creativity again, because they're not having to hold back. That's what Bruce was doing with us for so long. just keeping the players on lock, you know, making sure that they're tight and not conceding goals. And, you know, it didn't bring the potential out. And now we're finally starting to see it.
Yeah, Aston Villa under Steve Bruce are finding ways to win regardless of what happens. And that's something we've lacked for years, mate. Really have. We're unlocking the keys to victory. And I'm really happy for that. I'm really happy it's happening. Maybe Steve Bruce isn't the guy who pushes us on when we go to the Premier League. But whatever he's doing is right. Even if he's not doing anything, it's something is working.
He's doing something, mate. I think what if you notice what happened between Sunderland and Ipswich, I'm not sure. I think, obviously, Sunderland, obviously both games are at home, so you would have seen, or if anybody's seen the extended highlights as yes. well, you'll know, right? There was a bit of a tactical change when you look at the two lineups that came out, and obviously the players were the same, you know, bar Jedinak, but Adoma and Snodgrass were both pushed up a little bit further against Ipswich. And it almost seems to me, or what it indicates to me, is Steve Bruce is now saying, look, we've got those basics. We know what works. Snodgrass and Adoma are going to be on the wings, and that's the way it's going to be. Now, just push up a little bit. You know, have a little bit more fun. Work with Onoma a little bit more. And now that trust is being given as well to Whelan and Hourihan to hold that midfield together. I'm not sure if you noticed that.
No, I didn't, mate. To be honest, I just reveled in the joy of watching Aston Villa have so much fun. But yeah, it does look like they are trusting themselves a lot more.
And there's a lot more of a 4-2-3-1 going on, mate.
Yeah, I'm really happy for that. I'm really happy that suddenly a two-man midfield is working and Onoma is allowed to just do whatever he wants and Davies is allowed to run rampant and Adoma and Snodgrass are just allowed to have fun. And it's such simple, basic football and it is working so incredibly well. And it's unfortunate because this type of thing gives, you know, complete fucking idiots, you know, legitimacy. People who say, oh yeah, play this way, play that way, do rugby. And, you know, it gives these people backwards ideals about football legitimacy. But, man, I'll just kind of sit here and enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fun to watch now, isn't it? And we're seeing Snodgrass as well. He's been an absolute joy to watch. I think I really want to mention him because I think his heat map must have been absolutely ridiculous over the last couple of games. I haven't seen a player like him rush out of his position and just try to play all over the pitch since I think the closest we've seen is Jack Grealish when he first came through a couple of seasons ago. But Snodgrass is in the centre. He's on the right-hand side. He's always just trying to get involved. And I think he just deserves a lot of plaudits over the last couple of games. Just whilst we're obviously praising Adoma for scoring the goals, he's given that service, mate.
Yeah, where Adoma lacks in technical ability, because he plays like it's a video game. He holds sprint down.
He does.
He slaps the analog sticks and he glides past them. There's no technique, really. It's just pure football in its most basic and its most primal in Adoma. Whereas in Robert Snodgrass, we see someone who hasn't got the pace. But what he does have is a really gifted pair of boots. The balls he puts in, splendid. Some of the shots he can pull off, incredible. His set-piece delivery, you know, fantastic. Adoma, just there's two different sides of technique, isn't there? There's a pure fun and there's a pure science almost in Snodgrass, whereas you see the fun, the pure primal instincts in Adoma. It's incredible to see these two players do the business. What we will say about Snodgrass is of a defensive liability, especially with Hutton on his side. You know, two players who just are constantly in the attacking half. But I'll take what I get. We're winning. There's nothing going wrong.
Do you know what,
here.
Mate? Hutton has never been any good at positioning. And if we're going to think that, if we're going to think that's going to change, it isn't. So I think we just have to deal with it when it comes to that, and just let Whelan sit deep whenever anything happens. Yeah, I suppose the defense is the one thing where we can worry over the next few months. There's no way Samba's holding it up in there either.
Yeah. So moving on to the Ipswich game. We thought this would be a bit more tricky, right? Mick McCarthy, a bit of a physical team. Villa running out of gas maybe through a lack of rotation. It had all the, you know, all the hallmarks of a gutting loss or a terrible draw. But that wasn't the case. Villa got the 2-0 victory. Didn't play the best football in the world. But they took advantage of some mistakes by Ipswich. They took a, you know, they took advantage of an offside trap for the first goal when Odoma just glided through them. And the second goal was when Snodgrass played the ball over the top. One of their players, for some reason, jumped for a diving header clearance that he had no chance, no reason to make. And Odoma just skipped past them. You know, the man, Prince Albert, the man, absolute business.
Yeah, that was Dominic Yorfa, mate. Like that's the same Dominic Yorfa who's obviously played England 21 football, and I'm pretty sure he's on loan from Wolverhampton Wanderers. I would have even said Villa should have a look at him as well as a right back. But yeah, there you go. That was that diving header you were talking about. It was a good victory, 2-0 as well. And like, just the fact that we didn't concede despite everybody panicking about Samba being brought on. And I mean, I in the first place was a little bit weirded out with the fact that Jedinak started as centre back too.
Yeah, he has all the. I said this to my dad. He sits next to me. Jedinak he plays centre back like a midfielder, and that's got massive pros, but it's also got massive cons, as in positioning cons. The most important part of being a defender is positioning, just being in the way. But then again, you have his ball playing abilities and you have his defensive abilities, which are, you know, worthy of being a centre back. But he was taken off early on, injury, and it did look pretty nasty, to be fair, in live action, because he's jumped up for the ball and he's got his shoulder slammed against the ground after falling down. And it was pretty limp and held close to him. How he managed to last 10 minutes with what looks like a dislocated shoulder, pretty brave stuff. But yeah, once again injured. And it does look quite worrying at this point, mate, that Jedinak is just seemingly getting injured all the time now.
Do we know how bad it looks?
I don't think there's an official diagnosis, but it is a shoulder injury, and it could mean a few weeks out, which means Samba has to keep up his play.
Well, the thing is, Christopher Samba, I think, was brought in to be a bit part player, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And I think the reason that is because he just hasn't had a lot of football in England over the last couple of years. But I tell you what, he's come in and he's not showing any of that sort of panic that seems to set in when you do sign aging defenders who haven't been playing at a high level. He's, for my money, right, I think he's performed better than Joleon Lescott did when he came in. And you know, I'd say he's played as well as somebody like Senderos did when he first came in as well at Villa, and he's not panicking. He's done a good job. So I think that the fact that he's doing all right means that we should just, you know, kind of trust that we're in capable hands with him. I think Jedinak starting, obviously, it may or may not have been. This is just like an absolute sort of guess. I think it may have been to do with the fact that Garner was starting up top for Ipswich, and Bruce might have wanted to combat the aerial ability of the two strikers. I think Samba can do that job just as well. But I'm just looking back, and the only defender we've got fit who can replace him now, if anything else goes wrong, is Richie Delate. And I'm confused as to why we haven't given him game time so far.
Yeah, especially with the same whole defensive lineup for three games in a row. And we've got a short week now. We've got a game on Friday coming up that we'll preview later on. But it seems quite strange that you go for so long with an aging right back and an aging centre back with zero pace. And, you know what? I'm going to retract what I've just said, because, to be honest, mate, some of the bursts of pace from Chris Samba last night were unbelievable. He looks 10 years younger. So he gets every ball, gets his head on every ball, and yeah, maybe his passing could be a bit better. But he's like a man mountain at the back, and not many teams have that. Absolute beast.
Listen, I had Matt Lynch on my TV show the other day. Obviously, I'm just going to give that cheap plug in, but you know, it is the last episode of the series next week anyway. But yeah, back to it. You know, obviously, I was speaking to Matt, and I was thinking, well, Chris Samba, this the point about him. Surely, I don't know if there is anybody else in the Championship who has racked up as much of a transfer fee as him, like in years gone by. Like, that has to stand for something, and that is just a pure brutal guess. Has anybody racked up more of a transfer fee than him?
I wouldn't be able. I don't think so. And he's like, people act like he's a bad player, but no, he is genuinely really good. And we've seen that throughout his career where he's not been a bit part player for any team. He's stood up to the challenge and he's done the business.
It's because he played for that laughing stock of a QPR side where Jose Bozingua, obviously another player who played at a high level, was at, and obviously laughed as QPR got relegated that one season. I think it's because of that and his time there. He's always going to be associated with that failure. He's very much going to be associated with that, which is a shame. But hopefully he'll be able to right all that if we get promoted by the end of the season. And he's showed so far that he's performing. But mate, it just comes back to it. We don't want to. It's difficult to come up with any negatives in this podcast as of late. But it's going to come down to talking about player fitness. We need more rotation, and Delayt needs to come in if we're going to ever, you know. If we're ever going to rotate anything.
Yeah. It's difficult because when a team is performing as well as Villa are, you think that rotation, A, is beneficial because it brings fitness back into the team, but B, it also wrecks the chemistry of the team. Samba and Chester are performing absolutely admirable at the moment, and I'd find it very difficult. It's a very much a gamble to keep them on and to change them. I wouldn't envy Bruce making that decision.
Sure,
I wouldn't want to be.
Definitely. I mean, this is the thing. There is those two camps, and it's absolutely a legitimate thing to say. But then, what you do you make those changes when you're losing? Do you bring those players in and upset the balance of the side when you're struggling for results? I mean, that's the other option. I mean, what you could do perhaps is say, well, okay, we're 2-0 up now. Let's give Richie 20 minutes, let him settle back into the competitive nature of the game, especially when Ipswich are going to keep on attacking. That could have been something to do, but I think you're right there, mate. It's a hard one to judge when you are winning games, but it's also perhaps a sign of desperation. Do you really not believe in the rest of the players in the dressing room to do as well a job as the rest of them out there? That's the question.
Yeah, it's very difficult because, as I said, do you want to change anything? Don't you just want to change? Football management is a hard job. And I'm starting to see that through this conversation now. But yeah, mate, Ipswich Town, beat them 2-0. There's an alternate reality that exists maybe where Mick McCarthy could have been the Villa manager. But I'm happy we've got our Steve Bruce.
I don't want to think about that, mate.
Don't want to think about it, yeah. But Steve Bruce is our man. And Ipswich Town, admittedly, were the better side in the early period. They put the ball in the back of the net before it was taken back for a foul. And then Villa woke up. So,
All benefit.
Yeah, Glenn Whelan was the impetus for the first goal. We'll come on to Big Glenn, actually, because his volley bounced back to him. And he knew where he waited for the ball to fall and passed it through to Adoma, who scored. And Glenn Whelan is someone who has been a bit of a victim of this podcast over the last few weeks. Because he has looked scared to, you know, have the ball. He has been caught out. He has been that kind of pressure point for teams to exploit. But he's really stepped up in these last three games. And he has he's shown an immense amount of discipline to tie his Villa side together in the middle. And I think we have to give it to Glenn because Mr. Whelan has really stepped up for us. And it's showing.
Well, is he showing that? Is he showing that form that we saw him in when he scored that wonderful goal for Ireland against Italy? That was the Glenn Whelan, which I looked at and thought, man, this guy's a good midfielder. Perhaps he's going to perform well in the Championship. In the Premier League. You know, that was back in 2009, I believe it was. And now we're starting to see Glenn Whelan switch that form back on again. I'm sure he might. I'm sure the thing with him is he never would have stood out at Stoke City because they've always had, you know, similar sorts of players. But now we finally have that kind of a player in our team. He was struggling for a little bit, but now he's just playing so cleanly, isn't he? He's not misplacing anything, and I think his ideas are coming up. But I just wonder whether that's to do with the fact that the chemistry in general of the side has just improved. I think he's the kind of player that you have to base your midfield around, and he is that general at the moment.
Yeah, in a similar role to Jedernak, we've spoke about this a few times, but Glenn Whelan shows a ball playing ability and general intelligence and understanding of the game that isn't quite there for the Villa team. And that's just due to his pure experience of playing this game. He's been around the block. He's been at international football and Premier League football for a very long time. He knows what to do. And it's showing. And you know, I hope Villa fans are taking notice of him, because rightly enough, we've been giving him stick when he's been doing poorly, but now he's displaying. No, if Albert Adoma didn't score two goals yesterday, he'd have been the man of the match. Good would be an understatement, to be fair. He was brilliant yesterday. He held the ball up perfectly well, mate, and he did his job, and he answered the call of duty for Villa.
Yeah, and you know what? He didn't even pass that ball through to Adoma, if I remember correctly. He actually headed it through, and it was a pinpointed header. It wasn't one where he just kind of like, you know, launched it forward. He controlled that, and he controlled it through a couple of defenders to get it to Adoma. And that was just pure intelligence. And I'm just glad now that he's doing well, because I was slightly worried for a little while that he might have been the second coming of Gavin McCann. But it's obviously not the case.
He's almost like a better version. Everything we expected of both Mille Yedinak and Gavin McCann display in Glenwood. Someone who just takes the game by the scruff of the neck. And I appreciate Yedinak's physicality, but what he lacks is made up for in Glenn Whelan's just pure intelligence, pure foresight. You know, he's able to almost craft the game. And we saw that he covered the entire pitch yesterday. He was on the wing at points, bless him. But incredible performance by Glenn Whelan yesterday. And I think, you know, if we're going to give out any Holtcast award today, it goes to big man Glenn.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got to stay grounded on this as well. We've got to remember what we talked about in terms of criticisms before. Do we still trust Glenn Whelan and Conor Hourihan to switch that on against the bigger sides? Well, not bigger sides, sorry, the sides who have been tougher. You know, Wolverhampton Wanderers, for example, in that last game, they still got overrun, mate. You know, there's still something to be said about, you know, maybe having somebody else behind Whelan and Hourihan when it does come to those sorts of games. They're not the finished product, and they're not the answer all of the time. When we're supposed to be on the front foot and we're playing against sides like Ipswich, you know, they will switch on that form, and they will, of course, look great. But the only thing you got to wonder about is whether they can still hold it up against the bigger sides, because we haven't had a test for a while. That's one thing I'll say.
So, yeah, finishing up on Ipswich, they didn't manage to get a shot on target. Villa outshot them with 10 shots, so 16 shots, so to 6, 10 more than them. We had 5 shots on target and the lion's share, of course, of the possession, as we mostly do at home. 2-0, 2 goals from Albert Adoma, run home's rampant. Glenn Whelan stole the show. Chris Samba looked secure. And yeah, nothing much to deal with. But moving on, we are versing a big hitter on Friday on Sky 5, a late kickoff at 7-ish on Sky TV against Leeds United. Leeds United, who have struggled as of recently, but they aren't a team to be mocked, are they?
No, they have struggled as of late, but let's remember that they got a victory over the weekend in a big, and I say that it was a tough Yorkshire derby against Barnsley. It was always going to be a difficult fixture for them, and they turned it on. And they were playing away as well at the Tykes. So that, you know, it was a big one over there for them. No, the Tykes are Burnley, aren't they? I've got that one wrong, haven't I? Who knows? Doesn't matter.
I think the Tykes are Barnsley, you're right. The Tykes are Barnsley, okay. Yeah.
Cool, all right, on. I'm going to continue with my little analysis over there. But they got a 2-0 victory over Barnsley. It was a comfortable one. But as you say, mate, you know, before that, they struggled against Wolves. They had a little bit of a slip-up against Brentford, and they were struggling to score goals. But they've got a big man returning for them against Villa, quite possibly, mate.
Well, I am very cautious about this match, because Leeds are a team that look like they've had their beating, they're brushing themselves off, and they're ready to get into a few scraps, whereas Villa are the high-flying royalty of the Championship right now. And if anything, it'll be Leeds who want to make a statement rather than Villa.
Yeah, absolutely. And now I think what you've got now is you've got finally an Aston Villa side which is in form taking on Leeds. I think the last few times we've played up against them, we haven't done well whatsoever. But now we have to basically take this by the scruff of the neck. We can't have any excuses anymore. We're no longer a struggling side who have just kind of found it difficult to get into things. We've won our last few games. Was it how many is it now straight that we've won? Is it 3?
Yeah, within a week, yeah.
Yeah, 3 within a week. It's been ridiculously good. And I just have to, you know, hope that they don't take their foot off the gas now. As well as they've been performing, as much of a shift as they've been putting in, they need to really turn it on against Leeds. And I think it's a Friday night game as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's going to really set the tone. Yeah, on the TV, it's away up in Leeds. It's got the make again. It's got the makings of a match that Villa might struggle in, especially because, you know, Leeds are there to throw the knockout punch. Aston Villa, it's the pressure's on Villa.
Do you think so, mate? I think when you got to remember about Leeds United is they've been expected to perform a little bit better than they have done this season.
Of course, definitely.
We've been on a good run. We've been scoring goals. We've been taking points. If we lose to Leeds, if we don't do too well against them, then it's all right. We'll brush ourselves up and we'll get back up against, you know, the sides a little bit further down the table. Leeds United, though, they need to get a run going. I think the pressure's on them, honestly, James.
Oh, fair enough then. Well, certainly when we head down to Leeds on Friday, or head up to Leeds, sorry, on Friday, do we have some difficulty then in Leeds springing a surprise and giving us that knockout punch? If the pressure's on, maybe it's a pressure cooker that forges their promotion run.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to look at those creative players. I think Alioski, who just performed fantastically on the weekend against Barnsley, he's somebody you need to be looking at, as well as size. Both of them have been creating opportunities for Leeds. Hernandez as well on the left-hand side. Obviously, Ekuban hasn't been amazing up front for them, but this is where things get interesting and this is where things get complicated for Aston Villa. They've had a massive injury, a massive blow, which has harmed them so far this season. They, of course, signed that centre-forward from Hamburg on loan, didn't they, at the start of the season, a former German under-21 international, Pierre-Mikel Lasoga. 5 goals in 10 starts for Leeds. He's been out for a month. They tried him out against Brentford as well. He got an injury. The thing is, if he comes back against us on Friday night, you know, we might have one of the Championship's potentially most prolific goal scorers coming in. You always have to look at that record, mate, that goal scoring record. He scored more than once every other game, and he's performed at a high level before for Germany, mate.
It would seem, from what we've got to go on, that Leeds have a lot more threat than Aston Villa.
In what sense? Like the attacking-wise or...?
Attacking-wise, in the sense that they seem to have a number of people who they can play up front to score goals, while we have to work quite hard to get our goals from the wings or in the middle.
Yeah, well, I think that's just basically what our game plan's going to have to be, though, isn't it? And that's what our game plan has been. We're playing a sort of striker in Keenan Davis, which is there to create space for the creative players. And he's almost dropped into a little bit of a false nine role every now and then, hasn't he? And we're having to rely on Odoma springing something in from the left-hand side, but that's okay. You know, that just means that we get to hold the ball up a little bit more in midfield and hopefully sort of get more of a grip on the midfield. That's basically what we're going to have to do for now, unless Keenan Davis, you know, suddenly switches it on and starts scoring prolifically. We're going to have to use him in the way that we have done so far, and that's in support of the wingers.
Yeah, I'm certainly looking forward to see what we can do, because it is going to be a difficult game for Villa. It is going to be a game that requires a sense of creativity and also a solid game plan, because if Villa lose, I mean, yeah, again, we dust ourselves off. We are 6 points clear in the playoff. You know, we don't drop out of these playoff positions with a loss. The problem is bringing the whole pack together with a loss. You know, you give Leeds points. If Middlesbrough win, they get points. If Forest win, Ipswich win. Suddenly, it's a very condensed promotion race. And a lot does hang on this match. We can't simply say, if Villa lose, it's okay. I mean, in a sense, it is, because we are clear. But if Villa give points to teams underneath them, they're going to make this whole promotion journey a bit harder on themselves and everyone else.
Yeah, and also it does set the tone, doesn't it? If Villa do win, then they're obviously only 2 points behind Cardiff, and that makes things difficult for Cardiff. They have to think a little bit harder about how they perform over the weekend. It puts the pressure on them. But, you know, equally with Leeds United, they themselves are going to be under pressure, because even if they win, they're not going to get into the playoff places. And they've had this season after season, they're just about making it into the playoffs and just not doing anything with it. But I'll tell you what, mate, it is going to be a difficult one, because the last time we played them, I just remember it wasn't their strikers. It wasn't their attackers who ran us ragged. It was their defenders. I'm worried about Janssen and I'm worried about Luke Ayling, because we just did not handle them in the last fixture we had against them.
So, would you say that this is a must-win game for Aston Villa?
Must-win game. You know, we say this about every game, don't we? Must-win. Reality is, if we lose, it's not the end of the journey, is it? We've been on a good run of form. But if we want to show the sort of form of a side that's getting automatic promotion, and we want to keep that momentum up, then yeah, we should be beating a side like Leeds. If we don't, then, you know, it just tells us, well, it just shows people that we're not at the same level as Wolverhampton Wanderers. But that's where we need to be, isn't it? That's what our players need to be thinking, and mentally they need to basically be telling themselves that they're the best team in the Championship, and that means we need to be making, you know, wins against sides like Leeds routine. The wins that we've picked up in the last few games have been, you know, they've been against sides that we should be winning. Those are games that we should have done well in, but now it's a really tough test, and I'm wondering if we're going to be able to play with the same sort of freedom that we have done over the last few. And this is where, as you say, mate, I totally agree with you. This is where we're going to struggle without a legitimate striker other than Keenan Davis.
If Villa win, they temporarily go second on 38 points. Cardiff would have two games in hand, I believe.
No, mate, Cardiff have 40 points and we have 35.
Oh, yeah. Okay, my table has an update.
Oh, it's all good, mate. Just thought I'd get that correction in.
But thank you very much. That's why you're here, mate. That is exactly why you're here. But yeah, we do put ourselves in a really good position if we win, don't we?
Yeah.
Really good. Something really promising.
Yeah, definitely. Look, Sheffield United are going to be panicking now. They were second not too long ago. And now all of a sudden, Aston Villa are going to leapfrog them if they're not careful. Cardiff as well. They're not a great side. Look, they did well against Nottingham Forest in the weekend, but they've had a couple of blips as of late as well. And what we're basically making teams panicking now. Our run of form, it's basically only been beaten so far by Wolverhampton Wanderers, I think, over the last few games.
Sheffield Wednesday, of course, stole the other win as well before the international break. They beat us 2-0. But apart from that, mate, we would be tabletoppers of form apart from Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
Apart from that loss. But yeah, over the last five games, we've lost one and won four, which only Cardiff can match. Yeah. So I'm really, really happy with that, mate. And we go into a game against a Leeds United team who at the last five, they've lost three. Again, the most important result is your last one. Yeah, and that was a win,
mate,
for them.
Mate, I'm telling you, like, they've missed Lazoga like we've missed Kadir. And I'm worried about how he does when he comes back, but I'm also worried about how we handle their fullbacks, because, you know, you mentioned that issue that we had before over Alan Hutton basically, you know, getting forward quite often. Leeds are going to be launching a two-pronged attack against us, mate, especially on that right hand side. You know, that basically means Neil Taylor's going to have to be on form. I just remember us being absolutely outplayed last season by Leeds, and I remember it being one of our worst games of the season as well. And that's the thing that that's in my head going into this. Honestly, Luke Aylin on that right hand side, that he's going to keep on putting balls in.
Well, hopefully we deal with it, mate. Hopefully we do find a way to win, because it is going to be one of our harder games. And yeah, rotation is going to be an issue. But yeah, let's move on to your prediction, because I'm really interested to hear what you make of this game in terms of a scoreline.
Oh, mate. Okay. I've been solidly predicting Villa wins over the last few weeks. I don't.
Yeah, of course. And it's all come good for you as well. You know, you can't be blamed for that.
But this is different, isn't it? It is different. Friday night fixture as well. For me, this has the absolute makings of a 1-1 draw. I think that we'll still perform. We'll still be performing like a good side. But I think we're just going to struggle to score that second goal against Leeds. Now, the thing is, you know, against an average Championship defence, you know, you've got Adoma and Snodgrass who are going to create those opportunities and find space. That is fair enough. You know, I'm not going to dispute that. But with Leeds and the defenders that they have, I'm not quite sure we're going to be able to make them look as silly as we've been making other teams feel. So, yeah, basically, Janssen is ridiculously good, should not be in the Championship. He's going to be difficult to get past. And the other defender as well, Liam Cooper, has been in decent form this season. But that's the only thing I'll have to say about it.
That's fair enough. As long as the draw comes with when you give up the points and give up the draw, that's when it's gutting. But I think we'd all take a draw against Leeds United, I believe. At this point in time, I think everyone wants to push for the win. But a draw is a realistic and reasonable result that ensures that you don't drop too many points. And it also ensures that Leeds don't spring up too much. Now, it's only 1 point. They get that, moves them on to 30 or so points. So it's not the incredible. But it is gutting that we wouldn't be able to move on to 38 and then start challenging, maybe thinking about challenging for second place, because Wolves are running away with this.
Yeah, I mean, all I'll say is our defence are going to have an absolute, you know, work on their hands. If there's a game, I mean, this is the tough thing now, because I'm sitting here thinking we should pack our midfield with three, but then I'm thinking, remembering that Jednak's injured, and then also we've been performing so well and picking up the wins so to the point that we should just kind of play however we're playing. But mate, you know, the 3 points that we could get out of this would be so, so big, purely because it would make the rest of the teams panic over Saturday and Sunday. That is the advantage of having a Friday night fixture. You know, you can set that tone and you can make the rest of the sides around you panic. And you're right, mate. We can't let teams like Wolverhampton Wanderers keep running through the way that they are. And this is an opportunity to make a statement. And I think Bruce has a real opportunity here to rally the troops. But our defence is going to have an absolute night of labour cut out for them. Against that Leeds United attack in midfield.
Well, I'm happy to go for a 1-1 result as my prediction as well, mate. A draw, either way, looks to be on the cards. And a plenty to digest today, mate. Plenty to speak about. Again, it's been a full 50 minutes of no bullshit Aston Villa talk, hasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, mate. I think we were playing around with a few ideas, weren't we? Thinking, you know, let's throw some trivia in here or something. But you know what, mate? There's so much to talk about here with Villa that, mate, it's difficult to find room for anything else, and I think that's good. You know, we're past that point of the championship being boring for Villa fans. We're past that point of having to kind of prepare ourselves for weekend after weekend of 1-1 draws and losing 1-0 in the 90th minute. We've finally got an exciting time ahead for us, and I'm feeling positive every single week when it comes to Villa. If we lose to Leeds United next week, I'll still be positive. That's how positive I feel.
Well, one benefit, of course, of losing is that next week we'll be actually able to discuss and dissect something rather than praising Aston Villa, I guess. But yeah, as a Villa fan, I'd rather the 3 points than a good podcast. But that's not to say that today hasn't been good, mate. We've really went into things today. And next week, we will ideally drop a bit of surprise with you regarding the content of the show. And we'll pull something out of the bag. But once again, almost an hour's worth of Villa talk for you to enjoy along with the rest of your Aston Villa content consumption. And Daniel, mate, what are you up to now that you're not? You've got one more episode of TV.
Yeah, do you know what?
Before you're
free. Yeah, I was just gonna say, no, mate, I can't believe it's been an hour. Once again, it's so much fun talking to you. Absolutely enjoy breaking down Villa over the weekend. So thanks for that once again. What was I gonna say? Yeah, so I've got one more show for Sports Talk next week. I would like you all to tune in if you can. It's on at 11 a.m. on British Muslim TV, Sky 845. Yeah, it's, you know, it's the end of 2017 now. It's been such a quick year. So much has happened, I'm sure, for plenty of us. And I'm sure many of you have dropped off your New Year's resolutions over the past 11 months or so. But yeah, we'll see what 2018 holds. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at DHRazza. And I will let you know if I've got any more projects going on. I've got a few documentaries I'm hoping to drop over the next couple of months or so. Keep on with that, man. That's what I'd have to say.
Yeah, exciting times for Mr. Razza and exciting times for Aston Villa. And hopefully the bells are tolling for the Claret and Blue this Friday. We'll be back on Sunday to dissect the ideal victory against Leeds United. But again, for me, James Rushton, as for Daniel Razza, we're gone for today, and that's enough. That's 55 minutes of Villa talk. We'll be back next Sunday. Thank you very much for listening. As usual, leave a review on iTunes or wherever you can, as me and Daniel do take feedback very seriously. You know, we do take that very seriously. But yeah, we'd like to see some reviews, even if it is negative. You know, we can change the format, we can do stuff. But yeah, leave any opinions you have about the podcast to us, and we'd be delighted to hear from you. So good night, guys, and we'll catch you next Sunday.